I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story as we get set to delve into a realm that maybe you haven't gone too deeply into, yourself. We're going to talk about spirituality. We're going to talk about the soul, the voice inside, grace, among other things, with my guest Stuart Mooney, and he is going to be talking with us about his book and the American Buddha. Stay with us. We'll also be taking your phone calls. And that is part of what this program is all about, a big part, and that is walking together, talking together, and trying to understand one another, where we're coming from, sharing the different points on the circle, if you will. There are hundreds and thousands and millions, and well, if you consider the number of people on the planet, billions, 6 billion points on the circle, and we can learn an awful lot from one another and move forward in our own lives. It doesn't mean that we agree with everybody on everything. It just means that we learn something. We expand our understanding and our consciousness. And Stuart Mooney, I want to thank you very much for joining us here on the program. It's great to have you in studio.
Thanks, Richard. It's good to be here.
You have a book entitled American Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Is that who you are?
Everybody wants to know that. American Buddha actually is a description of a point that I want to go after. And that is practical awakening. Awakening, spiritual awakening in the Western world.
Okay.
And so the term's actually American Buddha. Buddha, if you go back to the Sanskrit, which it came from, actually is an awakened intellect. A Buddha is an awakened intellect. So, and to me, American is synonymous with practicality, materiality, practical living in this world. My idea is to bring the two together, and American Buddha is another way of saying practical awakening.
I would venture, just by virtue of the title of the book, people think that you are calling yourself the American Buddha, or more accurately from your perspective, as you've just shared, you are also trying to become an American Buddha, an enlightened person, raising your consciousness and your awareness and your understanding to live in this world that we, as you refer to, call the practical world.
Yes. American Buddha is a state of consciousness, just as the Buddha was a state of consciousness. And so we're not talking about individuals. We're talking about a style of perception of seeing reality in this present moment.
But seeing reality in this present moment differently than we've been seeing it up to this point. And that's what we want to talk about in this program.
Absolutely. That's what this is about. We usually see ourselves in this world as a personification, as an embodiment. This is me. That's you over there. Mm-hmm. And we're separate and autonomous. And we operate, we go through this world as individual beings. But perhaps there's another way of seeing this. Perhaps we are experiencing a misperception. We have thoughts. We have mind. We have body. We have personalities. And we all assume that there's a contiguous core holding those personalities and organizing everything together.
Mm-hmm.
But perceptually, maybe that's not the way things actually were meant to be. Maybe experientially, the mind is not my mind. My thoughts may not be my thoughts. This body seems to operate on its own, and these personalities seem to come and go like the wind. Only I grab onto them and say, hey, they're mine, this is me, stay out of my way.
It sort of leads into the book that I handed you just a moment ago.
Yes.
And referring to the fact that the I am Richard, and you would say I am Stuart. And although we may look like bookends right about now.
Twin souls, tell me.
We may claim, what's the phrase? I am, I think therefore I am. But the reality is that I think, therefore I am, but I may not be the I am I think I am. And that's really where you're coming from, that it's me speaking, the voice, Richard. People will identify with the face, the guy walking around with the black hat, and so on and so forth. But as we become more introspective, as we talk here, you're coming to the awareness that that's not really who we are, that there's something else, I don't want to say outside of ourselves, and yet I can't think of any other way, logically, word picture-ish to put it, that is really the true us. It's almost as if there's that higher power or an infinite intelligence that is running the whole show, including us.
I think that's much more accurate. Let's look at the truth of this experience. The truth of the experience is there's nobody in this room, and there's nobody listening to us today. That's the truth. That's the reality. It is a misperception, and it's a biochemical process in the brain which has us identify ourselves as this individual body. And as soon as we identify ourselves as this individual having my thoughts and my way, then we alienate everything else in creation, and we create a lot of problems. What I'm saying is that there is, and all this spiritual technology going on in the East is aimed at culturing the nervous system to shift the biochemical process in the brain to experience reality as a sense of oneness, that you're not over there, that you're as much me as I am, and everybody who's listening is my body, just as I am. Then the problems in life aren't so great, because I'm not at war with you or anyone else. You're as much me as me.
It's as the phrase goes, a little difficult for my brain just yet to
absolutely
wrap itself around.
Absolutely, because we're not talking about a level of thought or a style of thinking. We're doing something that ticks off your brain because and your mind, because we're saying, hey, man, there's something other than you that operates. There's something larger than you, and there's a place you can't go. Mm. Here's another way of looking at it. If we bring ourselves into the present moment, you know, and it's 11:11, and we're here in this moment only. If you're right in this moment only, there's no room for a mind. There's no room for thought. There's no room for interpretation of who you and I are, because there's just pure experience. There's no time to create a you and a me. There's just this moment. All I'm saying is that there is a way of shifting the nervous system to the point where it can't get out of the present moment awareness. And if you're in the present moment, you're in just pure experience without a thought process interfering or interpreting or saying, well, you're over there and your melon isn't as good as my melon. You know, that process can't go on. It's too immediate. And all this technology is moving the nervous system to the point where we experience only this moment. Go ahead.
I find it fascinating you use the word technology. In an interview that's upcoming, that same phrase was used, spiritual technology, and I thought to myself, it almost sounds, those terms seem mutually exclusive to one another. Okay, because technology, and I think of course, we're looking at all of this equipment in this room as we speak, and spiritual is something you can't see. And so, spiritual technology, what is another word or phrase that we can use for that that's been used in the past? Is there something other than that?
Well, there are.
Or maybe better yet, define for me a little bit more. What is spiritual technology?
I was trained as a scientist. You know, my background is in psychology and as a research psychologist. So I did research on the effects of meditation on the brain. So I'm a measurement guy, and I'm very comfortable with the term technology. Now, a yogi may sit down and he may insert certain sounds or mantras in certain areas of the body and chant them. To me, that's a technology. He does a step-by-step in a very, very precise, very aware manner. He knows exactly what he's doing to produce the desired effect in the individual, which is to shift their consciousness. He's an expert in that, just as you're an expert in what you do.
Mm-hmm.
He's a technologist.
Yeah. So it's just a contemporary term to define something that's been going on for eons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's crossover everywhere. Everybody is doing what they're trained to do. They're doing what they're trained to do, but they're amped up in their experientially so they can see precisely what they need to do to shift consciousness because that's their job.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's to me, it's something exciting to think about and to process so that we can stop thinking about it and just, again, be in that present moment. And we've all had those experiences where we have been right there in that moment, whether it is a sporting event or maybe it's a concert or with a loved one or sitting on the beach and you aren't really thinking of anything. And someone will walk, what are you thinking about?
Right.
Nothing. And the truth is, you're not, because you are, shall we say, you're one with, whether it's the ocean and the waves crashing in on the sand, or you're one with the clouds that are going across the sky. And your mind is, for those brief instances, your mind is actually quiet, clear. What happens to the mind in those moments? Because as you've kind of described, it gets befuddled. It gets really, you know, pissed off, so to speak.
Right. There's a silence that is associated with this present moment experience. We're looking at, you know, the ocean at sunset, and all of a sudden, whoa, we're gone. And we don't realize it till the mind comes back in and says, oh, isn't that beautiful? And starts interpreting it. Oh, it's pink. It's gorgeous. The waves are here. It's September. Oh, there's a cute girl walking by. Blah, blah, blah. But for the moment, you're just pure experience. Experience without an object of perception. There was no subject or object. You had become what was happening. And that's present moment awareness. And we all have that. The idea is to culture the nervous system to experience that as an all-time reality, because there are tremendous benefits for not only you, but for everyone on this planet. And we need to go help this planet big time.
Let's talk a little bit about you, Stuart Mooney. You say you were a scientist. How long have you been out of the scientific realm and studying all of this to bring you to this place where we are today talking about your book, The American Buddha?
I started out 40 years ago. I was one of the original transcendental meditation teachers. And because I was going and getting my master's at the time, I was just happened to become involved in a research study, which was sponsored by Yale. And actually Johnson & Johnson, where we studied the effects of meditation techniques on the brain. And so I was in a laboratory night and day. And also we studied the effects of meditation long-term on psychiatric patients. It was a very famous psychiatric hospital. My boss invented the MMPI, which is a measure of sanity in the United States. So, you know, it was a very well-credentialed study, and the shifts and the changes that we found in the brain just by repeating a sound, how can you drop oxygen consumption, respiration, your entire metabolism, 17% in 10 minutes? Well, you can't. There was no way. There's nothing documented until we started doing this research that just by repeating the sound in a certain way, it changed the whole way the brain and also the physiology moved, and it moved it in the direction opposite to stress.
I know that when I've been ill, I will hum. Mm. Or when I was a kid, I remember an experience when I had a bad illness, and I was laying there, and I was moaning. And my sister told my mother, make him stop. It sounds terrible. She says, no, no, that's the way he heals himself. Well, I didn't know that that's what I was doing. All I knew is I just felt the need to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's that vibration. It's that sound.
Your mom was right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about sound. And we all know intuitively what to do and how to do it. And that's where I also bring in a component which I call grace.
Let's talk about that.
Okay. We have all the spiritual technologies that people have been using for aeons, and I respect them all. I don't care what path you're on. If your goal is to find out who you are, then I love you all for whatever you do. But to my experience, there's some vital component that has to enter in that is like the lubricant that makes all spiritual technologies work. And I call it grace. And it comes from somewhere else. It doesn't come from us. It comes from a higher power, or however we want to describe it. Everybody describes it in every religion, in every path, in their own terms. But it's some component other than ourselves that lifts us out and makes the whole thing magical. So it's not the spiritual technology alone, but the integration of the grace into the technology, which makes it work. And that's where the transformation really takes place. Otherwise, it's just technology. When there's energy behind it, and that energy is very, very special. It's very magical. And I have many stories in my books about extraordinary miracles that happen that are driven by grace.
Now, a lot of people may have had those kinds of experiences
and
not even been aware that they were, say, extraordinary. And that leads me back to one of the things that we talked about earlier before we started the program, and that was my feeling is that Jesus and all of the miracles that he performed, as they were described as miracles or defined as miracles, to him it was just commonplace. It's just what he did.
Exactly.
It's like you said before, you know, I'm an expert, or if you will, at what I do, and you at you at what you do, and each listener at what they do, whether it's being a parent or a nuclear physicist or a farmer, whatever the case might be, whatever it is that you're, say, your life's purpose is, and you've managed to find that, you intuitively do it.
You have grace. Grace helps create miracles. And when you have an unbroken experience of miracles, well, that's being a God-man. It's just an unbroken set. For him, it's just the way of life. That's
mm-hmm.
correct.
Yeah.
Grace creates miracles. What are miracles? They're non-logical synchronicities that just happen for no good reason and no explainable reason at all. They just happen. But when they happen as a way of life, then somehow you're in tune with something much, much larger than yourself, and you're living and breathing the nature of creation herself.
I've heard the definition of a miracle in a very simplistic way was along the lines of interfering with the laws of nature. In other words, you allow the laws of nature to go about their normal course, but when you are able to interfere in such a way as to do no harm, of course, and the example was used of, well, one of the laws of nature is gravity. And this gentleman, he dropped an apple, and the other gentleman he was sharing this whole concept with reached out and grabbed it before it hit the ground. And he says, by your definition of a miracle, you have just performed a miracle, because you have altered one of the laws, and that it being of gravity. I mean, it's very simplistic in its definition, but in one sense that's true, because when you transform your life, if it was going in one direction and you start to become more conscious, and isn't that really what we're striving for more than anything else, is to get out of going along, maybe not so much blindly, but just it's like being on autopilot versus being conscious and saying, you know what, I was on autopilot and it was a nice ride for a while, but I would really like, and it's going to take me time to learn how to take responsibility, feel comfortable for being responsible for my life, but I want to do that and see where that'll take me. I want to try something different.
what is that that makes you want to try something different?
And that's the question.
That's already written too. The hand that jumped in to stop the apple from falling.
Mm-hmm.
That hand was destined to happen.
Are you saying that there is a script that's already been written?
Oh, absolutely. Because we're not you and I.
Okay.
There's a much larger script happening here. There's a divine intent. There's a program that 6 billion people are following. There's a sequence of thoughts going into your head, my head, and everybody's head that's listening in a certain manner to produce a certain set of actions that occur. You don't know what thoughts are going to come in at what moment.
Mm-hmm.
They just come in, and they come in a natural pattern. There's 6 billion sets of thoughts occurring right now in 6 billion people to move them into a dance that's much larger than ours. There's a cosmic intent going on. There's a larger initiative of which we are participating in with a larger goal. And the goal is really self, it, for me anyway, mm-hmm. I'm not laying this on anyone
right,
else.
Right, I understand.
Is the self-realization of the larger self.
Okay. Then, for me, the next progressive logical question would be, where then, if there is a script that's already written, wherein lies the meaning of life? Where is my meaning in existence? Because there's that old argument the universe is just an accident versus those who believe that there was an intelligent mind, a God who created all of this, gave us all free will and free choice. And I've always held up to this point anyway, I've always held to the belief that I have difficulty believing this was an accident. Because if that were the case, then it doesn't make any difference what I do. I can rape and pillage and plunder, or I can live, quote-unquote, an upright life. It doesn't make any difference because there's no meaning to life if it's an accident. But if it was somehow created, for some reason, in my mind, there's meaning there. Is there meaning to our lives if there's already a script written?
First of all, let's take it back to our lives. There is no our life.
Okay.
Okay. To begin with, there's one life and there's a universal life. And yes, there's a great direction, a great meaning, a cosmic meaning, a divine meaning. You and I are divine. You know, we're expressions absolutely of that one divine.
Okay.
There's a divine script that's being played out that is vitally important that it is played out. And we each have our part, like a cell and a body, to participate in that. Okay? There is only one being. There's not you and I. That's a misperception. That's a chemical anomaly that has been operating for thousands of years in the human nervous system. You know, thoughts used to be the servant of the self, but then all of a sudden, over time, thoughts started to take over and say, well, I'm the boss, and you will do what I say,
mm-hmm.
and the mind is the boss. Well, the mind was the servant. You know, the mind was there to serve the self on earth, to get things done, to play this out.
Okay.
As Shakespeare said, the play is the thing. And yes, it's vital. And what an important role.
How do we know what our role is? How do we get in touch with our script, our lines in this script? Or whether we're conscious or we're on autopilot, are we playing our role and reading our lines in our script?
Yes. You're already reading the lines in the script.
Okay.
Okay. There's, of course, free will and choice on a certain level, at a certain other level. Let's say at the worm's eye view, there's a lot of free will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can choose to stand up, walk out of here, blah, blah, blah. But there's also the bird's eye view. There's mm-hmm. a higher self, you and I, that really observes what's going on relative to everything else. And relative to everything else, everything's pretty well set. what you do, what you are is pretty well set. Becoming conscious is a gift. It's a natural gift that's already written in the script. It's no coincidence that you and I are sitting across from each other at 11:30.
Okay. Would this have happened anyway?
Yes.
If we weren't conscious? If we were on autopilot?
But that wouldn't happen because the script wouldn't allow you to be unconscious or me to be unconscious.
Is there...
I know it's really hard to understand. I think I'm fighting
it a little bit, you know.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because that's part of the process. You know, mind is mind.
Yeah.
And mind is... It's like a miserable child, you know, of the divine.
Yeah.
You know, it thrives on, I'm miserable now and I need to get somewhere else to be unmiserable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's always saying that this is lousy and it's just around the corner. The truth is that this is all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And holy people have been saying this from time immemorial. That this is it. This is it. This moment is it. Because the goal is not a good or a bad moment,
mm-hmm.
but just the experience of the moment itself. There's no judgment going on. There's just experience going on. And if you're in that experience, it's heaven.
Yeah.
If you're in judging the experience, it sucks.
This is true.
You know, and that's the difference between pain and suffering. Suffering is judging pain.
Mm-hmm.
Pain's part of living.
Yeah.
But pain is just a thing. It's not a personal thing. It's just a process happening. Mm-hmm. But we make it very personal. You know, my pain, and why do I feel it, and you don't, blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah, blah. If you step back, it's just a neutral aspect of experience. So the experience is the thing. This moment is the thing, because that's all there is anyway. You can't get out of it.
Right. Now, I turned the screen that is recording this program to
yes.
you because the thought has occurred to me to help our listeners to understand. And maybe I won't use the example here as much as I will use the example of a tire on a road.
Okay.
The only part, there's only one part of the tire that is touching the road at any given time.
Right.
That is the present moment for us as humans.
Correct.
Whereas this line here, as our voices are recorded and created into sound waves on the screen that we're looking at that line is the only moment there is. That's it right now.
Right.
This isn't it over here to the left.
So what is that? That anything other than that point is a symbolic representation of direct experience. And
yes.
that's all the mind can do is
but
symbolically.
Now that's the past.
No. That's what we call it, okay?
Okay.
It's not the reality. It's a symbolic impression. It can never, if you try and remember what happened with mom at 12 years old, the best you can do is remember a symbolic representation
okay.
of it. If you really want to remember it, bring yourself into the moment because all moments are exactly the same. The experiential aspect of the moment will be exactly intimate like this. You bring your mom into this moment here, and you'll know what happened.
So what you're saying is that I can take that moment at 12 years old with my mother actually to that
They're
present
all
moment
the same.
Point.
No, not that. This.
This. Okay.
This moment. Everything takes place in this moment.
Okay.
There is nothing else but this moment. Everything else is baloney.
Yeah.
It's created. The past isn't here. It's unconscious. There's only one conscious aspect, and that's what's happening right here.
And that's that point where the tire, that only
touches
spot where the tire
road.
Is touching the road.
Right. Only it's infinitely small, so there's no time for a mind
right.
to even be there.
Exactly. It is something to be contemplated over and meditated over, and that's one of the things I'd like to get into, too, is techniques that we can utilize to help bring our minds into that quiet space, or maybe more appropriately, to take ourselves to that space, that place where we are one with whatever the experience is around us, where our minds become quiet. And I'm wondering if maybe that's the difference. Not trying to quiet our minds, but we're going to the place where the mind just becomes quiet.
Right.
So you're not, so, and the difference I'm seeing is the first example is there's resistance. There's interplay between yourself, if you will, and your mind. The other is, mind, do whatever you're going to do. I'm going over here, and then you will do whatever it is that you're going to do. And in this case, I'm in the present moment. Mind is quiet. I'm not resisting it. I'm not putting any energy into quieting the mind. I have a feeling that meditation for many, and I know myself this way, that was always the struggle. Trying to quiet the mind so that I could meditate. Okay.
The circular argument.
Exactly.
Right.
Whereas, mind, do what you want to do, because this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to focus on that leaf on the tree, or the waves crashing into the shore, or whatever it is that you use as your focal point to be in the moment.
There's nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do.
Okay, and so you have the right approach, mm-hmm. which is, listen, the mind is like my dear aunt, who blah, 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 blah all the time. And she's just the sweetest thing. And mm-hmm. the mind's very ancient, and it's been here forever, and it will be here forever. So you make friends with it. You go, blah, 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 blah. Just allow that process to go on. Like you said, it's not an interference. It's just a process, okay? It's very old. Let the mind do what it wants. The idea is to bring the experience into this moment. The first thing is you cannot use the mind in thought to bring it into the present moment, because it's an experience where mind and thought can't live. They can't exist mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in the present moment, all right? They can't exist, so you can't use them to get you there. Some of the spiritual technologies, meditation techniques, use a concept that you can trick the mind by having the mind fall into the gap between two thoughts. Certain meditation techniques will try and do that. My feeling after 40 years is that the key element is to bring this element of grace in. And there are certain ways you can access it. One would be to be in the presence of a holy person, say like Amici or Karunamai or some of these holy people, Mother Mira, who come and they'll transmit grace.
Mm-hmm.
And that grace will create a biochemical shift in the brain. There are also systematic techniques. One I really like a lot is called Oneness Blessing, or Diksha, where people are trained to lay hands, and it will create a biochemical measurable shift that's been measured in laboratories. So that technology is very good in combination with whatever technique, because it seems to disengage what you're talking about, disengage the process of thinking mm-hmm. from the process of experience.
Mm-hmm. And that's
okay, so that's what we're talking about
right.
doing. So that you just become the experiencer. You're just it without an object of experience. In order to do that, the mental activity has to shift away from the experiencer so you can see, oh, I'm not that mental activity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just experience.
Yeah. And tricks don't work. We have to be genuine, and we have to be honest about it, and we have to move forward in that
regard.
You
have to be authentic.
Authentic. That's the word I was looking for, yes.
If you feel crappy, then you feel crappy. Yeah. That's your authentic you.
Yeah.
If you feel
yeah.
happy, you feel happy.
So tell me, I'm going to find a space, all right, and let's just say I'm out on the beach, and I'm sitting in my chair, and I'm just out there. I almost, just by virtue of wanting to ask the question, I'm almost in violation of the process.
Yeah, what can I do?
What can I do? But what is the technique? What are the processes, the steps that one can go through to begin that disengagement?
It's biochemical, and it does not have to do with thinking.
Okay.
Okay, as soon as you try to do something to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
See, the fatal flaw is that you're already there. You know, we do everything to get away from being what is. and what is being in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But we immediately symbolize or think we have to get some other place other than this because this isn't right. This is right. What I have been discussing and what I talk about in the book is that you need to find ways of systematically accessing that grace, because that grace will produce a biochemical shift in the brain so that you can be at the beach, and it doesn't matter what you're doing, thinking or not thinking, you will never be away from the experience of the moment.
Okay.
Never. Impossible.
All right.
I'm a prisoner of the present.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that occurred not because I thought my way here, but because systematically I was brought into a biochemical shift in my nervous system, so that now, no matter what I do, I can't get away from it.
Okay.
And I think that it's a great way of living.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way of living because you're no longer my enemy. I love you and everybody here and everybody who's listening,
mm-hmm.
because there's no more need for me to get something other than what's already here.
So to bring that grace to us, you've already explained that one of the ways, of course, is to be in the presence of a holy person.
A holy person, prayer is a wonderful thing.
Okay, so prayer is another.
Yeah, you know, you can open yourself up to the divine and say, listen, I can't do this myself. I need some help. So, you know, zap me.
Okay.
And help this work. You have to go somewhere that isn't here. Because otherwise, if you try and do it yourself, it's like a drowning person trying to pull themselves out of their water by tugging on the shirt. You can't do it.
Mm. And no one can do it for no one. No one other person can do that for you.
Unless they're in a divine state. But then they're not actually doing it. They're just because they're aligned with the experience of the divine. Then they can bring you into alignment,
mm-hmm.
okay, with that, because there's nobody there in their experience. There's nobody there. They're just a cosmic process taking place. And that's their experience. And it's not some kind of totally weird thing. It's the only completely authentically natural experience you ever had.
And the, shall we say, the best prayer is just
is your prayer in your way, because mm-hmm. your nervous system isn't structured like mine,
right.
and your awakening will not look anything like mine.
No special mantras.
No, there's
other than, again, the own your own personal.
There's plenty of technologies.
Sure.
Let me put it this way. We're in a prison. Okay, we're behind bars. Now, I can give you all kinds of spiritual technologies to make it more comfortable behind bars. We can move the furniture around, okay? We can get a big screen.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, you'll still be behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that all the time. I teach people technology for relationships. I heal. I've healed for many, many years. And, you know, I help people manifest physically, finances, or whatever they want. But that's still moving the furniture inside the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I also support and do the technology that helps open the gates to get you out. Because when you're out, you don't need all that furniture because you're out. You're free. You're free. And then you can do whatever you want. I'm not telling people to do anything other than they're already doing. I'm just making people aware that there's something other than them that they can access that can help shift things. And I see this coming, okay, on a much larger scale, a larger scale movement of people shifting into this state. And I think it's going to produce a more synergistic effect. It has to, because we can't go on living the way we're living, hurting each other. We can't do that anymore. There's too many of us here.
Yeah.
And we all have to work as one person.
If you've just joined us, my guest is Stuart Mooney. He has written a book called The American Buddha. We encourage you to check it out. It is something that, as we've discussed in this program, at times, as I've stated, it's difficult for my mind to completely grasp it. But at the same time, every so often, it's like, aha, I get that little aha moment. I understand. And then it goes away. And then it comes back. And then it goes away. And that is bound to happen. But the plus side is that I'm getting those little aha moments just the same. So at least I'm beginning to realize, again, that authentic in this moment, the now, as you've said before, has been spoken about by countless people down through the millennia of human history. And I remember hearing someone say once about the Bible, for example, and all of the various books, and then the reasons for this and that and the other. And I remember saying once, well, from what I understand of what you're saying, if people had gotten the message in the first four Gospels, and let's say, I'll take it as far as the book of Acts, those five books, if the people had gotten it, we wouldn't have needed the rest, because we would have understood. I and my Father are one. Greater miracles than you will do, greater miracles than I will ever do, because you have access to all of these wonderful things. But it was always still back to the here and the now, this moment, and caring for one another, and caring for yourself, and being, and just being. You know, I am. It was always in the present moment. Not I will be, not I was, I am. And to me, it's extraordinary that growing up, as you say, and educated as a scientist, and the only other one I've met thus far who has begun his search and his process, Greg Braden, who has begun his own scientific and spiritual investigations. I think this is a wonderful thing, because not much of a spiritual nature has come out of the West. And I mean of a spiritual nature. A lot of a religious nature has come out of the West, but not much of a spiritual nature, it seems.
Yes. So.
And that's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah. That transformation is taking place, and it has to. I see that there are probably going to be at least 100 Westerners who are going to be in extremely high states of spiritual development. And those people are going to pop up probably in the next 20 years, maybe even sooner than that. I'm hoping sooner, too, yeah. Because they have a tremendous effect on a large number of people, maybe hundreds of thousands per person. That's what we need, because then they can express it in terminology that the Westerner can understand. I do the best I can in American Buddha mm-hmm. to express my little facet on the diamond, mm-hmm. how I see it. Mm-hmm. But there are many other people who have to come out and express it in Western terms, and people can see, oh, yes, this is a practical guy. You know, he's got a family, he's got five kids, grandkids, he knows what he's doing, he's living in the world, and yet he is expressing a truth in every breath he takes. That's something to look at and to follow. Then a transformation can take place. And I see that coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, we encourage you to investigate all of this. We ask you to check out the website. You can link to, there is a link on richarddugan.com to American Buddha, and you can check out the book and your philosophies and your background and many of the other things that you have to offer that people may very well be interested in to begin their process, shall we say, of being more authentic and being in the present, in the moment, and accessing that grace, whether it be through prayer or if they choose to, I use the word advisedly from what we've talked about, seek out a holy person who is connected divinely in that respect.
Sure.
And so you can go to richarddugan.com, and you can go to the shows page, and you can scroll down to where this interview will be available, probably in about 10 or 15 minutes after the broadcast, and you can listen to the program again. And I probably am going to have to go back and listen to the program again so that I can glean a little bit more and understand even more so, and incorporate that in with, of course, what also you have in your book. Now, you've also written in your book, you talk about various types of miracles. And just to recap very quickly before we go into, because I'd like to have you share with us some of those. Give us a brief, again, a definition as you see it of what is a miracle.
A miracle really isn't a miracle. A miracle is becoming aligned with what's supposed to happen anyway. So somehow you're able to tap in to the cosmic program, and you click in, and your timing is perfect. You get into cosmic timing. And when you're in cosmic timing, synchronicities happen, which not only change your life, but change the destinies of other people forever. And that is a miracle. A miracle is non-logical, non-linear. Mind has no place. It can't figure it out. It freaks out. This is a divine moment.
Okay. So share with us a couple of the examples that you give in the book.
Okay. I'll start with this one. I saw many clients when I lived in India. I lived in India for a couple of years and served a holy man and also taught at the University of Madras in Chennai, India. And while I was doing that, so I was seeing clients, and some of those clients were pretty sick, and I also had email clients from around the world, and so I was working with them too. And one was a Chinese lady who had moved to Toronto, and she was having a really hard time. She was very, very depressed, and no matter what I asked her to do, she didn't seem to be responding. I'd give her various spiritual technologies to do, which she would be open to, and finally, I just sensed, you know, that she was not in good shape and suicidal. One night, I was asleep, and I jumped up. And I had this thought that I had to hop on the internet right now and email her. And I hopped on the internet and did her, her AOL. We were both on AOL, and I shot her a message saying, "Don't do it. God doesn't want you to do it." And I don't know why I just sent it at that moment, but I had to. And I sent it, and I didn't hear from her for a couple of days. And then she finally emailed me, and she said, "You know, I was on my way to the kitchen to get a steak knife to cut my wrist. And I walked by the computer room, and the computer went, 'You've got mail.'" And she opened the email, and it said, "Don't do it. God doesn't want you to do it." And she was so shocked by that, that she didn't go through with it. She felt that the divine had stepped in and changed her life. And it did change her life. And she ended up becoming very successful and getting married and moving into an entire destiny that was different from the destiny she was in. I didn't do anything. All I did was wake up with a thought, "You better send this now." I didn't create it. It happened. It was a process of creation that I participated in.
Mm-hmm.
I shared that experience. And those things happen very often. The gurus, knowing that I was a scientist, used to do things like, they said, "Listen, we're going to be passing our Shakti, our energy, through you to heal. So we want you to go out into the crowds at the temples." And I literally healed thousands and thousands of people. They had a police actually around me to keep people away from me while I was healing, because ladies would hang their, you know, weak old babies over to be touched and stuff like that. And being a scientist, that this was not logical to me at all, that you could touch somebody and have them transformed. And I remember the first one was a lady they brought down the hall who had a huge lump on her neck, and it was a terminal cancer, and she had three children. And I laid my hand on her neck, and I remember it was hot, and it was red, and it was not very pretty looking. And my hand was shaking. I could feel my whole body shaking, trembling. And she left, and about 2 weeks later came back, and it had shrunk from the size of a golf ball to the size of a marble. And within 6 weeks, it was just a little red mark, and the cancer had completely disappeared. And the gurus would walk by and say, "Explain that. Deal with it.
Deal with it. Wrap your brain around that one."
Whoa!
And so that was my introduction into healing. And yeah. By the end, I had, by 2004, I had done thousands and thousands of people. and very similar type stories, you know, about that type of thing. I did a psychiatric patient, which was the worst patient in the hospital at the Banyan Hospital in Chennai, which is a hospital, psychiatric hospital for women, just to demonstrate to the psychiatrist how healing works. And the psychiatrist in chief called me the next morning, and she said, "Get down here." She said, "You're not going to believe this." She said the client got up, made her own bed for the first time ever, went down, had breakfast, and said, "Where have I been?" And she was completely back in gear, completely as integrated as you and I.
Wow.
And they couldn't figure it out. And it was not me. It's just tapping into a natural process of becoming aligned with what nature wants to do and shifting her life. The last story I'd like to tell is a very personal one. In 2005, October 18th, my oldest son, Josh, passed away. He was in Scottsdale. And his liver failed. He got very ill, and he didn't wake up. And our family was devastated. My five children, his four brothers and sisters, were really shook up, his mom. And my spiritual partner, Irene, and I were together, and months later, her daughter got pregnant. And this was, I think, July of 2006. Shanta got pregnant, her daughter. And we went through the pregnancy and everything, and she had a little baby on January 30th of this year, little Sophie. January 30th at 5:32 in the morning. And Josh was born at January 30th at 5:31 or 5:32 in the morning, exactly the same moment. And so you figure, well, what statistically are the chances of that? Well, it's I figured it out. It's 1 in 27 billion. There are only 6 billion people on the planet. With that happening, the pain in the hearts of my family disappeared, because it was like a sign from the divine, from Josh, saying, "Hey, I'm okay."
Wow.
And that transforms destiny on a very personal level.
You talk about the people that we have lost over the years through the senseless behavior, and we can give it whatever name we want. And I see those happen in the news, and I think, my God, what lost potential.
Mm-hmm.
What lost creativity? What we are missing by the lack of their presence in our lives and in our world to contribute to a better world, hoping that that's what they were about. And of course, you hear the stories. This person was this, and they were that, and the great smile, and the creativity, and the love, and they loved animals, and they loved children, and on and on and on. And I often think about those situations and thinking that we certainly could be so much further along as a society, as a race of people, if we would just get beyond this business of "you're different, ergo you're my enemy." And again, different doesn't, you can put any label you want on the word different. It doesn't make any difference what the word is. I came up with a phrase many years ago, and it's for some it's difficult to understand. If there is a difference that makes a difference, there is a difference. But if there is a difference that makes no difference, there is no difference. And it's not always easy for me to remember that. But the fact of the matter is that we're all in this together. It's extraordinary to have the opportunity to sit with you now, for the second time and share and talk, because we had the opportunity of getting together, and sharing over a cup of tea and what have you, just just enjoying that moment. And it was just wonderful. And it's great to have you here in the studio to talk. And I hope that we'll have the opportunity again as time goes on to see where you are again in the present moment on this path, on this journey.
Now.
On this now, exactly right. And again, I want to remind our listeners, Stuart Mooney has put out a book. It's called The American Buddha, and it is available through his website, and I'm sure through the various bookstores and Amazon.com, and the list goes on. But you can link to his website at richarddugan.com. Just go to the radio show's page, scroll down, and his link is there next to the link to the interview that you're listening to now. If you'd like to listen to it again, we certainly would encourage you to do so. Before we go, I want to let you know that next week is going to be a fun program as well. We're going to have as our guest Katie Romero, and she runs an agency. It is called Guardian Angel Management, and we're going to be talking, among other things, about hypnotherapy, one of the things that she enjoys talking about. But we're also going to be talking about spirituality in Hollywood. And not necessarily whether there are this type of movie or that type of movie being made, but what is going on in Hollywood? What is happening? And how we can play a part in the transformation of our world through that particular realm in the media. So I certainly hope that you'll join us next week as Katie Romero from Guardian Angel Management will be sharing her story and giving us some insights. And we hope that you will join us then. I thank you for joining us here on the program. Check out richarddugan.com. Email me at richard@richarddugan.com. And we'll talk to you next Saturday. Love to all.